Okay. So, we're spending some time now trying to get a feel for what are the characteristics of our wireless link, since all the communication solutions built on top of that, obviously, are sort of dependent on this link. And what you can do and not do depends on the characteristics of the link. So last time we looked fairly generically at a comms system model. So how are you transmitting bits over our wireless channel? We didn't actually get to, again, what the characteristics of the actual radio channel were, but we looked at the, sort of what we might do to the bits to improve the quality as they are transmitted over the radio channel. Okay, so first of all, we assume that everything that we're transmitting is a bit, so it's digital. So if you have, for instance, a voice signal, we assume that we've digitized it somehow. One characteristic of radio channels is that the bandwidth is relatively limited versus a wired channel of some sort. So we said, well, we have our signals. We would like to compress the amount of data, to reduce the amount of data as much as we can. So we looked at techniques for reducing data for both voice signals and video signals. Okay. So that we have to, so the rate at which we can transmit is lower. We then noted that these channels were prone to error, and so we need some sort of error methodology for dealing with error. So source encoders, we tried to reduce the number of bits we were sending. Channel encoders, we had to now add in more bits, so add some redundancy or some clever use of the bits so that we could either detect or detect and correct errors. And so we looked at how that might be done in terms of blocks and also in terms of bit streams then. Okay. And we saw that in practice, usually some combination of the various techniques was used. Okay, so then we have our stream of bits that we want to send. And the question becomes, how do we actually send them? And, well, over a radio channel, you're going to send them as a frequency-based signal, so a sinusoidal signal at some base frequency. And we said that basically, if you have this base frequency, then, or this base sinusoid, then there's only a couple of things you can do to it. Usually you either change the phase of the signal or you change the frequency of the signal. Okay, so we're now ready to transmit over our radio channel. And so today what we're going to do is have a look at what are the characteristics of that radio channel. Okay. So in terms of references, most of the notes and ideas come from with the William Stallings book, chapter 5. And I think there's a more recent version of that book, but it doesn't matter. And again, what we're doing is we're going to have sort of we're going to try and get a high-level view of what are the issues. We're not really digging down into the mathematics of comms theory. So if you are interested in that and want to learn more, Bruce Black is a good reference, or Andrea Goldsmith. Okay. So, physically, the equipment that we need to send our radio signal is an antenna, and so we'll just have a quick look at what types of antennas are out there. And then when we send, assuming we just send the signal, we want to look at what happens to the signal as it goes through the channel. So in this case, it's propagating through the air, and what happens to it. And the bottom line is that the amplitude of the signal is decreasing. The signal fades as it travels. Okay, and so that affects the power level at which you have to transmit the signal relative to the distance you expect the signal to have to go. And so we'll look at what happens assuming that you're out in the middle of space, the signal still fades, and then since we're not out in the middle of space, there's all sorts of sort of complicated things happen if your signal is traveling through a terrain with features, if in addition possibly your sender or receiver are moving at the same time. So we'll look at those effects as well. Okay, so the antenna is just the device that we use to send or receive these sinusoidal signals. And so typically, a single antenna can both send and receive. Now, a feature of antennas is the pattern in which they transmit their signals. So you have essentially your signal sent at a certain power, and that power can either be dispersed sort of evenly in all directions, or it can be aimed or pointed in a specific direction. Okay. And so antennas radiate in three dimensions, although typically, again, we're concerned with what's happening in two dimensions. Okay, so when we see pictures of how antennas radiate, usually we're getting a two-dimensional cross-section. So, again, we can think of it radiating all in the same direction, or there's a directionality to the antenna, and the beam width will measure sort of how the characteristic of that directionality, so how tightly the power is focused in a specific direction. Okay. And in terms of receiving, the same thing applies. So the receiver might be better positioned to receive from a certain direction rather than other directions.
Excuse me. I didn't understand the last sentence the angle. For the angle within which.
So say your antenna is capable of directing your signal, so the signal more or less is going, say, in that direction. Then, if that antenna is receiving, it's going to receive the signals again from the direction that it's that it's directed towards, okay? So, some parabolic antennas strictly radiate in a single direction, so they won't receive from any other direction. So if the signal is behind the direction the antenna is pointed, it won't receive that signal. Okay, so what sorts of antenna types do we see in wireless comms? Well, in terms of our, say, access points, our cell towers, we would have possibly antennas that are broadcasting signals, so radiating in all directions. And you can see, again, if you're trying to catch users that are moving around and could be in any place, then that's useful. You can have sectoral antennas which point themselves at sort of a given wedge of our full circle, and we'll see later that that can improve the interference characteristics of our system. Or if you're communicating sort of tower to tower, device to, sort of with fixed equipment, you again might have a point-to-point panel, which again is going to just aim the signal in a specific direction towards the opposite point. Okay. Within mobile devices, obviously you can't have big panels or big poles sticking up, so you have microstrip patch antennas, which essentially use sort of coils of wire to get the antenna length. Okay, so assuming that your antenna is not omnidirectional, but rather pointed in a certain direction, then we use antenna gain to measure the directionality of the antenna. And so gain is the power output in a particular direction compared to sort of a general broadcast. Okay, so if you're radiating at a certain power, then you can either sort of spread that power density over everything, or you can sort of focus it in a particular direction. The effective area is a way to characterize the gain, and it's related to the physical shape of the antenna, which begins what is focusing the power. Okay, so the gain again is related to this effective area, and it's important, should be noted that it's also a function of the carrier frequency and wavelength.
What is the effective area?
It's a way of characterizing what the gain of your antenna is going to be. So if your antenna is a certain shape, it's going to focus, again, the power in a certain direction, and by just looking at the shape of the antenna, you can characterize that.
It's an angle? Or what is, like, what does it measure?
It measures, again, the shape of the antenna, and therefore the way that the antenna is sort of directing, do we have any chalk? The signal. we don't have any chalk. But again, if you can, if you think of, say, a parabolic antenna, so you just then the area is going to measure the parabola. Then it's going to measure how sort of flat or pointy that parabola is. Okay, and that will in turn say whether it's being how it's being directed in a how the power is being directed. Is it sort of broader or more narrow? Okay, so again, we're not going to look at sort of how any given type of antenna exactly shapes the power. We're just, again, going to say, well, certain antennas will have certain gains, and we'll take those gains as a given as we move along. Now, the signals that are produced by these antennas have a number of possibilities for traveling along the terrestrial environment. You have ground waves, and ground waves will follow the contour of the Earth. And these are relatively low frequency signals. So low frequency, again, would correspond to not, you know, smaller bandwidths. The main example of these would be AM radio. And the advantage of this sort of a signal is that it can actually travel long distances. Sky waves bounce between the Earth's surface and the ionosphere, so the atmosphere. And again, they're mainly associated with radio, with audio radio transmission, like CB radios, amateur radios, international radio, where you're trying to get the signal to travel a long distance. Because of this bouncing, they have potentially quite a large range. Okay. Again, the frequencies for those are not high. The ideal for our type of communication, where we want higher frequency signals so we can squeeze a higher bit rate out of it, is what's called line of sight transmission. And as it says, this is sort of a point-to-point transmission. Okay. Now, as we'll see later on, there's a lot of ways to possibly achieve line of sight without actually having line of sight, but you need in some way for the signal to have a path to from sender to receiver. So the types of signals we're dealing with are these line of sight signals. And so they will have characteristics, again, no matter what, even if we were sending these signals out in space, the power would dissipate over time. Okay, and this is referred to as free space loss. Okay, so no matter what, there's a limit to the distance the signals will travel and be then decipherable. If we're sending them in any sort of environment, any sort of terrain that's not perfectly smooth or even smooth terrains, then we get the signals bouncing off objects, bending around objects, possibly being distorted or changed by the sort of moisture in the air. We get lots of effects beyond the free space loss. And so, again, these will complicate
what the model that we look at.
So we end up with sort of a relatively complicated picture of what goes on with the signal. Okay. So there's a limit, again, to line of sight. There's a sort of physical limit to line of sight propagation having to do with the curve of the Earth. So eventually you'll hit the horizon and you can't send any farther. And so, again, the distance is related to how high up you put your antenna. Okay, the higher, the longer before you hit this curve. Okay. There, again, is this bending property going on, which means that you can actually go a little farther than sort of the geometry would indicate. So the distance between the two antennas, again, you can, before you hit that, is dependent, obviously, on both, the height of both antennas. Okay. So there is a limit, just physically and geometrically, to how far away you can put the antennas. A more severe factor relating how far away you can put the antennas is the dissipation of power as the signal travels. Okay, and this is referred to as fading. And fading, effects are related to the distance of the receiver from the sender. Okay. And so this happens no matter what and is made worse by effects within the atmosphere and the terrain. We're going to classify the effects according to the distance it takes to essentially observe the effects. So large-scale fading refers to effects due to the large distance between transmitter and receiver. And then small-scale fading effects will be observable with small changes in the distance between the sender and receiver. Okay. And so, again, we'll look at each of those in turn. Large-scale are relatively straightforward. Then small scale gets more complicated. Okay, so what effect does attenuation have on the signal? And so, As we travel, everything decreases, and We know, again, that we have noise in the system, so we have to keep our power level high enough to be, so that we can distinguish the signal from the noise. And so the higher the power level, sort of the greater distance you can go before that potentially becomes a problem. At some point, obviously, you can't send a sort of infinite power, so you have a maximum on the power and hence a maximum on the distance, and then beyond that you're going to have to relay your signal. Okay. So the shape of the signal can also alter, and so depending on your frequency, the power decline in power levels differs, and also its potential, depending on small scale effects, you might, different frequency components within a signal might, or different frequencies will fade at different rates or for different with different levels. Okay. So if your signal has multiple frequency components, then the shape of the signal is going to be distorted.
Just when you say the shape of the signal, it means like
the frequency characteristics of the signal. Okay. So, again, we're going to start with the easiest thing, which is sort of the most obvious thing, which is free space loss. And let's start with our ideal antenna, so an omnidirectional antenna. We're radiating in all directions. And there is a relation, then we can relate the power at the transmitter relative to the power at the receiver, and this is impacted primarily for us by that if you send at a single frequency, then this is going to be a function of the distance squared. Okay, and so what that means is that the power at the receiver is dropping with 1 over the distance squared. So that's quite straightforward. You just get this curve of power dropping. We can always express this in terms of decibels, and then the loss is characterized by, again, turning the PT over PR into decibels. But, so, again, this does depend on frequency. So if you're sending at a single carrier frequency, that's not an issue. If your signal is composed of multiple carrier frequencies, you will observe some distortion based on that. Okay, but for our purposes, the main thing that we're concerned about is this distance squared effect. So that was for omnidirectional antennas, and we can account for gain within that as well. And again, gain is just improving the power received relative to the power transmitted. Okay, and you can turn that into decibels.
Okay. So, again, the gain can be used to compensate a bit for the distance.
Okay. So,
frequently we sort of normalize the power equation, and so we define the power received relative to the power at a fixed distance. Indoors, that's taken to be a meter. Outdoors, usually a 100 meters, I think. And so what that allows us to do is sort of to clearly see that that the distance relation coming through.
Okay.
So, if you're out in, again, the middle of space, that's what happens. If you are in a specific environment, then the environment plays a role in how the signal travels. Okay. So we talked about line of sight, and out in the middle of space, you just, the signal travels from point to point. In any sort of realistic terrain, the signal is going to be bouncing off objects, bending around objects, to some extent traveling through objects. And all of this is, again, going to impact on the reception of the signal. And in particular, what happens is that in addition to getting, well, possibly instead of getting your line of sight signal, you get all of these copies bouncing up and down, and at the point of reception, all of those copies are going to combine to form the received signal. So here we have our transmitter, and again, we get a number of copies depending on the terrain. So this is awkward in the sense that you have all these copies of the signal, and so that's going to be a represented distortion of your original signal. But one thing to notice here is that we don't actually have a line of sight. There's actually a built-in between sender and receiver. So while these are a bit of a pain to deal with, they can also create a situation where you don't always need line of sight to actually receive your signal.
Do you need all the copies to be received, or just in order to rebuild the signal, do you need every copy?
It's not that you need every copy, it's just you will get a bunch of copies, and then you have to deal with the bunch of copies that you get.
But could you construct it back from just one of the copies being received?
But how would you, the problem is you can't distinguish.
Yeah.
Well, right now we're going to assume you can't distinguish between different copies. So this actually, this is, it's not like I'm getting copy 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It's more like I'm getting the signal.
Yeah.
Now, again, more modern techniques, possibly you can actually distinguish between one copy and another, but for the moment we're just assuming that we're getting some signal which is a combination of all of these. Okay. And so,
again, it's difficult to explicitly quantify what happens, but we're going to look at the multipath effect, which again means that their signals are coming at us from different directions, and this can either lead to a reinforcement of the signal or a complete cancellation of the original signal, and we sort of hope that we end up somewhere in between those two cases.
Just since the paths are like the same length, how do we manage to interpret the signal? Because it will interfere?
Yeah, well, that's the whole point. So then we'll see as we go on what we can do, or at least for a few simple cases, we'll see how that interference works. In general, you're just hoping that there's enough improvement versus not disimprovement. Then on average, you're going to get your signal. Okay. So what can happen along if you have multiple paths? Well, we've been talking about a single signal, so we're thinking of your signal as being a bit. And so even within the transmission of one bit, your paths are messing around with the representation. But additional to this, we can get effects of time dispersion, which means that you not only have multiple copies of the same bit interfering with each other, but you have copies of consecutive bits interfering with each other. Okay. And so the idea is if the lengths of the paths are sufficiently different, you can end up with, again, different bits being received at the same time. Now, your hope is that if there's significant difference in the length of the paths, there's also going to be significant difference in the attenuation. So you hope that the interfering symbol is much is of a lesser strength than the original symbol.
Okay, so here we have we're sending a series of bits. We send a 1 and a 0. And so when we send the 1 somewhere off in the distance, we have a mountain that signal is bouncing off of. And so as the signal propagates directly to the car, travels directly to the car, it's received. But during that time, you still have a copy of that signal traveling. And so, again, that copy may arrive at the same time as the next signal. So it does represent a form of interference. Your best hope, again, is that this reflected copy, since it's traveled a long enough distance to experience that delay, will also have attenuated further.
Okay. Now, within the representation of a single bit or a single signal, our multipath is
causing, again, multiple representations of the bits to be received. And we'd like to think about what happens, how those multiple copies interact.
Okay. Now, in general, you're going to have lots and lots of copies.
Just as an exercise to think about what's happening, we're going to look at a case where you have two copies. You have a direct line of sight copy, and then you have a signal bouncing off the ground.
So, again, our power, the power in the signal is decreasing with the distance squared.
But these are sinusoidal representations, so we have to account for the phase shift. And the phase shift is going to be a function of the distance traveled, or the difference in distance traveled for one signal versus the other.
Okay.
So we have these two sinusoidal signals. It's going to be easier to represent them as complex exponents. And so we see that the amplitude is again a function of phase and the frequency. The difference in phase between one copy and the next is going to be dependent on the distance traveled. So the received power is a function of, again, the phase difference between the two signals and the relative distance of the two signals. Okay. So now we need to examine the distance between the two signals and our line of sight distance. Again, you can, if you think of a right angle triangle between the height, height of the receiver and the height of the sender, so H1 minus H2, and then we have our overall distance between sender and receiver. So the distance traveled is H1 minus H2 squared over V squared. Now your second distance, you can think of this as a reflection. You can also think of it as extending downwards. This picture is not quite right. But then you get H1 plus H2 squared plus D squared. Now, if the distance between sender and receiver is a lot bigger than our antenna heights, we can, in terms of the D factors in here, assume that they're roughly equal to just D. D squared is much bigger than either of these two components. We can assume D1 equals B2 equals D. Okay, Okay, so that allows us to pull out distance from our power equation. And so, again, whether the symbols are combining sort of constructively or destructively is dependent on the difference in phase. The difference in phase is dependent on the difference in the distance that the signals travel over the two paths. Okay. So you need to figure out what the difference in that distance is, and we can use the Taylor expansion of the square root function and take the first couple of terms, and so d1 is d plus h1 minus h2 squared over 2d, d2 is d plus h1 plus h2 squared over 2d. You can use that to find the difference. That's the difference between these two components, and that gives us 2h1, h2 over d.
So that's the difference in the distance traveled. The difference in the distance traveled then gives us the difference in phase. So we get this delta phi term,
which again varies with 1 over d.
Okay, so plugging, before we plug it in,
if delta phi is small enough, then again we can approximate our exponent as 1 minus j delta phi, and then with 1 minus j delta phi gives you approximation of this term of delta phi squared. Plugging in our calculation for delta phi, then we get that the power now varies with the original distance squared, and now we've inserted another distance squared term. So based on these two rays, we see the power is now dropping as distance to the fourth. Okay.
Whoops. So I thought there was one more slide on that. Okay, so
that's, again, just calculating two rays there.
So the question is then becomes, how do you decide what this loss model is in an environment where we can have sort of any number of different paths by which we're receiving the signal. There's work which seeks to sort of explicitly calculate, so you want to analyze the terrain in a very detailed fashion and consider all of the possible paths, so that's one way of going about it. And that can work in situations like, it can work where things are not mobile, so things aren't changing. That can be useful, for instance, within a building. Okay. Now, the problem sort of outside of that is that the terrain is changing, and the terrain is large and changing, so it's sort of difficult to predict exactly what's going on. Okay, so we have a number of
possible ways of dealing with this. So, one of the big questions is sort of, it comes from the, mobile telephony world, which is we need to know the power, we need to know these sort of path characteristics in order to know how many base stations we need to put in, what power levels they need to be, well, mainly how many base stations do we need to sort of place in various areas. Okay, so obviously the more likely you have, the higher your drop-off, so the more frequently you're going to have to place base stations. Okay, so another proposal is to actually just go out and measure received power levels. And then based on what you measure, try and based on what you measure in a very specific situation, try and extrapolate that to lots of different scenarios. So we'll just look at example models. We'll look at the Lee model, the Akamura model, and the Hata model. Lee is one of the first models, and it's relatively simple. And again, it was based on measurements taken in Los Angeles. The Akamura model is more complex, tries to sort of give greater detail to various factors. It was based on data taken in Tokyo. And then the Hata model is, an extension of the Akamura model. So one caution when using these models is that they are, again, based on measurements in a certain terrain. So, for instance, if the measurements are from Tokyo, Tokyo is a very low city, so very few high buildings. It's questionable, for instance, how well that will translate to downtown Manhattan, where everything's a skyscraper. Okay, so just again to have some idea of how these work, it's a matter of essentially curve fitting and then trying to extend beyond the original conditions. So the Lee model took measurements at a specific frequency, 900 megahertz, and measured the loss, again, relative to distance. It then sought to characterize that loss. Okay. And so we get power loss being a function of distance, and distance to some power gamma. And then gamma is determined relative to a certain environment. then also it's also a function of frequency, and what happens at frequency again is going to be relative to the environment, and then a number of
a number of other sort of fudge factors. Okay. So what are the fudge factors?
Well, the height, the actual power of transmission, the
antenna heights and the power of transmissions. And antenna gain as well. Okay, so again, N is dependent on your terrain, so whether it's suburban or urban. Okay, so again,
empirical data was taken for a certain set
characteristics, and then the model, the goal of the model is to extend beyond slightly different characteristics. Okay.
So, Akamura model is one of the more widely used models, but again, it's based on the characteristics found in Tokyo, and Tokyo has a specific terrain of, it's dense but low. Okay.
So
it looked at a specific frequency range, although again it allows you to extrapolate beyond that range. Looked at different distances between sender and receiver, and different antenna heights.
Now, what it did then was it, instead of trying to come up with just a relatively simple equation, it actually gave a graphical representation of the attenuation based on these factors. Okay, so it's a little bit more accurate than just an equation. Okay, so again you get a loss model, and again this is a median model, so you'll get the actual value will be above or below that, and
loss is dependent on free space loss, a detailed calculation of how loss is varying with frequency and
distance, and that's going to be represented as graphs. Gain factors, which again are represented as the gain factors are equations, and then a gain due to the type of terrain. Okay, so again, instead of trying to encompass that in a single equation, graphs were produced
for these factors, and they're dependent on, again, the frequency and the distance. And so you have your attenuation factor here, and a gain factor just depending on whether you're in clear space or, again, in an
urban or suburban area. The antenna height also has an impact. Obviously, the taller your antenna, the sort of more you tend to clear obstacles. Okay, and again,
how true that is dependent on
a number of factors. And those, again, are going to be encompassed within graphs. So we have the actual height, and then how that impacts relative to distances and relative to frequency. So I'm not going to. I have an example in here, but look, you can plug in the numbers for yourself. You're just, you know, again, reading off the different factors from the various tables. Okay. And so this gives you it's a relatively cumbersome way in which you can try and estimate your attenuation factor. Again, you have to look up all these tables. So the Hata model took the Akamura model then and tried to convert the tables back into mathematical equations so that, you know, instead of having to go examine the tables, pick all the data off separately, you could relatively easily come out with a number. Okay. So the goal of the Hata model is to come up with empirical formulas that match the plots created by the Akamura model, and also to try and extend the range of the Akamura model for different sorts of terrains. So again, you have your median loss factor, and this is dependent on the same things we've been seeing before: our effective heights, the height of our mobile station, the frequency, and the distance involved. Okay, so those are the correction factor based on the height of the mobile station. This is dependent on terrain, as you would expect. So again, the more obstacles, you know, the more problems you have, the more height might solve some of those problems. Okay. And so you do end up arriving at different equations based on the type of terrain within your which you're working with. Okay. So, again, those can be used to get some, these sorts of models can be used to get some estimate of how your signal is going to be attenuate in different sorts of terrain and based on some characteristics of your transmission system. There's a lot of these models floating around, but I just mentioned a few to see how they work. These sorts of calculations, again, are important when you're trying to decide how you're placing base stations within a city. And again, more, how frequently do you need to place base stations? Okay. So basically, those models in some way measured either an average loss or a median loss. It should be noted that path loss has random and somewhat unpredictable factors. Okay, and so typically we say that the received power is going to be, you know, above or below the estimate at any given distance. Okay. And so if we have some sort of, if we've arrived at some sort of model for the drop in power, we then need to assume that at any given time the received power level is plus or minus that, and so we need to again push up beyond. We need to push our received power level up sufficiently far to deal with that plus or minus factor. Okay, so this variation is typically modeled as a log normal function, so log referring to, again, the decrease with as some factor of distance. And then around that, we assume that the variations are distributed according to a normal distribution. So a normal distribution is your bell curve distribution. And so you assume that most of the occurrences are, you know, within a standard deviation, and then as you go out farther and farther, you have less occurrences. Okay. So, again, typically you would not want to sort of assume that your power signal was exactly on whatever the original attenuation line was, but you want to probably drop down below that again. Okay, and that should, again, capture most of your components. Okay, so that was actually the less complicated part of what goes on with radio channels. As we move forward, we're just going to assume some sort of constant attenuation with distance or some sort of exponential attenuation with distance. We'll say that it's down to some factor gamma, and gamma is typically between 2 and 5.5.
So do we need to know how to calculate what we saw before? Like all the path loss?
Well, in terms of what you need to know, go back and look at old exams and you'll sort of get an idea of... Old exams are on the registry website. If I remember, I'll post a link.
Okay.
But you go to Google DCU exam, old exams or something, and you should get to the... But they're all there, and you know, you'll get a feel for what you need to know and don't need to know. I wouldn't ask anything beyond the slides, for instance, even though there's some complicated stuff going on beyond what I put up here. This is more results-based, although, again, I've given you a few derivations, so I probably expect you to know those. So, again, this decrease factor is essentially the core to how cellular systems are designed. Okay. Now, again, moving forward, that's as far as we're going to go. But I'd be remiss if I didn't mention to you that things get more complicated. And again, we'll see that these additional complicating factors are going to drive some of the more complicated modulation schemes, etc. Okay, so large-scale fading, we're saying that everything's just dropping off exponentially. With small-scale fading, the received power can fluctuate rapidly with small changes in distance. And if you're moving also with time, if motion is involved, that's relative to time as well. Okay, so we'll take a break now, and when we return, we'll see, at least at a high level, what these factors are and how they impact their signals.